Welcome to episode 28 of the Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. In this episode, Amber, Steve, and new Equalize Digital team member and senior plugin developer Matt discuss Accessibility Checker's new front-end highlighting feature, why we built it, and the future adjustments we're working on. For show notes and a full transcript, go to accessibilitycraft.com/028. And now, on to the show.
Hey everybody, it's Amber, and today I am here with Steve.
Hello everyone.
And I'm also super excited that we have a new guest on the podcast, but not necessarily a new guest, newer member of the Equalize Digital team.
Hey guys.
Welcome, Matt.
Absolute first podcast ever.
Do you want to introduce yourself a little bit?
Sure. I'm Matt Boone. I'm a developer. I write software, PHP, JavaScript, all kinds of good stuff. I've been doing this for 25 some odd years and love getting to work with these guys.
Yeah, and you are our lead plugin dev making all the magic happen with Steve. So what are we drinking today, Steve?
So we have a beer sour today by a company called Owl Farm. I'm reading the can here because the website doesn't have a whole lot of information, but it's a unique fermentation. It's called Big Berry Imperial Fruit Sour. Let's see. Do we have any? A lot of times they put funny things on these cans, but this one seems to be pretty straightforward, to the point.
I mean, I like the label. I think it's cute. It's like a basket of berries with legs and arms, and it's carrying another basket of berries, and it's like blueberries and raspberries.
Yeah,
and it has feet and hands.
But the basket's like its head / body.
Yes. So I don't know. It's cute and it's pink. I like pink.
Yeah, is that pink?
It says it's got black currant, vanilla, blueberry, and raspberry. I think it's, I mean, it's kind of a reddish pink, I guess. I don't know. I think it's pink.
Yeah, it says an imperial fruited kettle sour ale brewed with raspberries, black, and let's see if I get currants, blueberries.
Currants.
Okay, thank you guys. Blueberries and vanilla beans.
This is a 9%. So we're going to have a fun podcast episode.
No work done this afternoon.
That's right. We're taking off early.
It's Friday afternoon. Pretty sure I hit 40 hours yesterday. So I deserve my beer. Thank you.
It does say on the can, it says that these normally have around a 5% and are soured for a day to achieve moderate acidity. This release boasts a 9% ABV and has undergone an extended souring period for a bolder tart flavor.
All right, so should we open it and figure out how sour it is?
Yeah, let's do it.
That's great.
All right. I like to do it right in front of the microphone just for fun.
Yes. Sip.
Ooh, I like that.
It's definitely sour.
What do you think?
I'm going into the glass.
Ooh, all right, Matt's pouring it into a glass, so you'll have to show it to us.
We like to.
You can describe it too for people, since we don't share our. Yeah. Oh, it's darker than I thought it would be.
Yeah, that's really pretty.
So, what color would you say that is?
Yeah, what color would you call that?
It looks kind of like cranberry juice, or
Is it purplish?
Yeah,
it is. It's like a burgundy purple.
Yes.
How cloudy does it look to you?
You know, it doesn't look that.
Like the fruit?
It doesn't look that cloudy. We've got some effervescent in there, but it's not.
Got a decent head on it.
Yeah, it's not very thick.
Yeah, and it doesn't look foamy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But it smells great. Mm.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going
in. Pretty good. You know, like on first taste, it kind of hits you hard, but it finishes pretty smooth. Like it doesn't seem to stay too too strong.
I kind of think... Hold on.
A lot of cherry in there, right?
Raspberry? Is it raspberry you're tasting?
I think that's the currants.
Okay, yeah.
So explain the blackberry currants. Is that it? That's a fruit? Am I...
Well, I mean, currant. Currant is a fruit. It's like a... Is it related to cranberries?
I don't...
Like, I think they look the same.
They're really small. Oh,
They look like blueberries, kind of. Or grapes.
Yeah, they're small berries of Grand Chubs and are more like gooseberries, says Google. Thank you, Google. But, I think they're kind of bitter. And honestly, that's what I'm getting. And part of me was... Like, it for me, on the finish, it leaves sort of a bitter, more than a tart left in my mouth. I don't know. Are you guys getting that?
This reminds me of like a homemade cranberry relish for Thanksgiving.
Oh.
Mm. Yeah, it really does kind of have a cranberry flavor, even though it says there's no, but yeah, I think it's coming from the currants. Yeah.
I normally stay away from the cranberries at Thanksgiving. Maybe I should try them.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's one of my favorite parts of Thanksgiving. Why don't you like cranberries, Steve?
Oh, there's turkey.
Well, some people put their cranberries on top of their turkey.
Yeah, yeah. Those are people that don't like turkey.
You guys.
you're a gravy guy,
I guess. I'm a turkey purist. That's what I'm trying to say.
No gravy either on your turkey?
No, no.
Have you ever had the next day sandwich? You slice your turkey, you put it on the sandwich, and then you take the cranberry relish and smear it all over the inside of that sandwich. It's the best.
So I'm a vegetarian, and I think that sounds disgusting. However,
just minus the
my
turkey.
Children. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would eat a cranberry sauce sandwich.
With a piece of cauliflower on it or something, right?
I mean, I don't know. Here's a question. Would green bean casserole be good the next day on a roll?
A little mushy. I don't know.
Yeah. Chris does that, and Nora, our oldest, does that. They put stuffing on it, too, and I'm always like, why are you putting bread on your bread?
Yeah. This is definitely really good. I like it. I like the sours. We should do more sours. Yeah.
I like sours. I don't think this sour is as fruity as some other sours that I've had.
Like sweet? Is that what you mean by
fruity? Yeah. Well, it's not that I expect them to be like sweet. It's more just, I think it's the finish for me. I think this has more of a bitter finish at the end.
Yeah, it does. It's kind of dry, but I kind of like that, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
Would you get it again?
Yeah. Oh, I've got two of them in the fridge. So, like, we have to crack the other one.
We could talk about how we were supposed to record this episode, like, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And Craft City, by the way, that's who we get that ships alcohol. I think they probably find us annoying because we order 3 cans all going to separate addresses. Well, they ship them all to me. And then Chris messaged them and said, hey, they're supposed to go here. So it took forever, but I guess they made up for it. They said that they would send you guys extra. You got extra?
Yeah, I just got a couple. I bet.
Well, that's nice.
But sometimes when we do pops and stuff, we get a whole case of them. You know, can...
Yeah, it's because Chris can't get one pop, so he ends up having to buy like 12 or 6 or something.
No, this is good.
I know. And then it's like our kids are drinking them. You gotta say
the pops, that is.
Yeah, the pops. Yes.
So on the Owl Farm Unique Fermentations website, which is owlfarmbeer.com, they've got other flavors, and they've got really cool like art to go with each one of them. You know, like Amber said, this one's got like it's a basket of berries with legs and arms. But
Oh man,
do you see them? They look pretty cool.
Yeah, I just went and looked. So there's like a grape that looks like a
cowgirl,
a cowboy. I thought cowgirl because of the way it's standing.
Oh, there's a mustache.
It has a mustache, yeah. So I think it's a cowboy with a pistol. The watermelon with the shaker, I gotta find that. If that's like a chili watermelon or something.
And it's shaking the chili or whatever that is on top of its head.
Is that a cucumber there? The second one? Yeah.
A watermelon coriander.
Mm.
Oh, it's, and like, it tastes, and tajin. Are you guys, do you guys do much tajin or is that just a Texas thing?
I don't even know what that is. So this is the Midwestern guy talking here. North Midwestern. What is that?
So tajin, T-A-J-I-N.
Yeah.
And there's like an accent that I don't know what it's called on the I. It's a Mexican, like chili lime salt.
Ooh.
That really tastes like lime. So it looks like they have that both with the watermelon and the cucumber. Our kids eat cucumbers with tajin on them.
Really?
I mean, they'll put it on a lot of things, but they like to eat cucumbers with tajin because one of our kids' friends, her family is all Mexican, and she went to their house and got introduced, and she's like, "You have to go buy this at the store." And now it's like they're all addicted to it.
Yeah, we're.
Do you have it where you live?
Yeah, we do. We make micheladas, which are it's basically you use a Mexican beer. And then maybe some tomato and ice, and like a little bit of Worcestershire, and put tajin on the lip, and it's incredibly refreshing.
It's like having a Bloody Mary only with beer instead
Yeah.
It's that's a neat idea. I kind of want to try
they're,
that.
They're great. Go cut the grass and then have a michelada, and you'll just it's great.
Maybe we'll see if we can find a one of those for a future podcast episode. Yeah. Shit. And we can talk about whether it's as good as when you make it yourself or not.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to try some more of these. These look really good. Like the watermelon tajin, cucumber tajin, mango tajin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, these look good.
All right, yeah. So I definitely think everyone go check out Owl Farm. They're neat. Do we know where? Oh, they're in California. But you can find it on Craft City. In the U.S. anyway. I don't know if you can find it outside the U.S. But so today we invited Matt on because I wanted to chat about a feature that we released somewhat recently in our plugin, Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker. And it's we've kind of internally called it front-end highlighting. And I don't know if either one of you. I know you started it, Steve, and then Matt finished it up when he came on board, and you guys work collaboratively. But do you want to describe what that feature does? And then we can talk about why we did it and some challenges and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So if you've used the Accessibility Checker, you may know this, but and before this release, you know, you would scan your page and you would get your issues listed below your post in the post edit screen. And then we would present them with a code snippet of the problem, and then like I don't know how many months ago, maybe 6 months or a year ago, we released an image field where if that code snippet included an image, we would show that image to you, and that was in an effort to simplify and demystify the problem, right? Like we understand that the plugin is not only made for developers, but it's also made for content creators. And to present a content creator with a big chunk of code is kind of like, you know, it's just foreign to them. They don't really know what to do or where to go to solve that problem, or even to identify what the actual problem is. You know, now as code nerds like me and Matt and Amber, we can kind of deduce from that code snippet where the problem is and what it is, and you know, we can view the source on the front end, and kind of get to it. Right, we can find it. But then
sometimes that's even hard.
Yeah.
Like, you know what was always challenging for me was empty headings. Because it's just like, here's an H2 with nothing in it. So on the front, that's just like a space. So usually what I would end up having to do is going to the front end of the website, clicking view source, not even the like inspect. So view source, so it would open all the HTML in a different tab. And then I would do a command F
finding
and
replace.
Search for an empty heading tag. And then I'd have to read what was around it to try. Now, like in the block editor, it's a little easier because you can usually see, like you could look in the navigation and do it. But this would happen sometimes when people like on a Beaver Builder website, and I'm like, I'm not as familiar with a Beaver Builder editor or that kind of stuff. So it was like, those were hard to find. And I was like, we really just need something to be like, here's this empty space.
Yeah.
And put a box around it.
So in an effort to advance the plugin and to help users identify issues on their site, regardless of their technical ability, we decided to come up with this feature called front end highlighting. So where on the back end, you have a new button now that says view on page, and you click that button and it jumps over to the front end page, scrolls to the element, puts a highlight around it. I think we use like a pinkish magenta highlight around it. There's a button, and then there's a pop-up that has the error and describes the error, the same that you would have in the back end. You could, you know, if you want to look at the nerdy code, you can still do that from the front end. You could hit the show code button, or you can click over to our full-fledged documentation on our website. And from there, that gives you a visual reference to where the issue is. It highlights it. It shows it. It's very easy to identify where the issue is. Now, there are more tools built into this on the front end. You could do that just one at a time from the back end to the front end to see where your issues are. But from the front end, you can actually initiate the front end highlighting overlay, and you can then just page through your errors on the page. So all of them from the front end without even having to go to the back end. And you can get all the information you need to help identify those accessibility errors to help you better remedy them and fix them. One thing that, you know, with our plugin that may be a little more unique than some is in the way that we parse the HTML of the page, and we scan and we try to run our rules to intelligently identify the issues on the page. There are times where an element may be hard for us to find on the front end, again, after we've identified the issue. And there can be many reasons for that. It could be that it's dynamic and it changes. And that would actually, in the back end, probably keep reintroducing new issues. But it could also be that it's...
because we're not currently looking at JavaScript.
Right. And sort of, this would still be a challenging even if we were. Just based on the fact that elements on a website can be hidden. They can be off the page. They can be inside of a div with an overflow hidden on them. They could be in a navigation that's currently closed. So there's so many like variables to consider when you're looking at a website, where an element can be on the page, can be any number of things, right? So we added a feature in there to disable styles. And I think I don't want to speak too out of turn, but I haven't seen a lot of WordPress accessibility scanning plugins that actually allow you to disable all the styles on your page. But this is a feature that is common in plugins like Wave, where you can initiate Wave from the Wave plugin in your browser, and then you can turn styles off. So I thought that bringing that feature to this would be great. So when you page through and you hit an element that is like hidden, like and a lot of times it's like on elements that have like an aria hidden or a display none on them. The plugin will tell you that the element is not visible. Try disabling styles. And a lot of times if you disable the styles, all your CSS on the page gets removed, and then we highlight that element. And a big use case for this is like navigation, like mobile navigation. So like a lot of times on a mobile, you size down the browser and your mobile navigation has a hamburger menu and it has like a close button, right? And a lot of times those are hidden on the desktop. And so you can't see them, but once you disable styles, there they are. You can see them. You get the magenta highlight around it. You get the button with the description. And so we're doing everything that we can to try to present these issues visually to the user so that they don't have to have coding knowledge.
Yeah. So I know one thing that we worked on quite a bit, and we actually had one of our testers who does testing for our clients who's blind also test the plugin, because we thought it was really important that even though this is a quote visual tool, we want to make sure that all parts of it are as accessible as they can be. And Matt, you did some work on sort of managing focus on the front end for screen reader users, right?
So yeah, being able to tab into the focuses and then stay within that focus so that somebody that's visually impaired doesn't get lost in tabs in and out.
Hold on for a second. Let me describe, just for someone who hasn't seen it. We have a button. It is an actual button, which is, it's actually first in the DOM. And I've had some thoughts about this. It's like first in the DOM, but it actually visually shows up in like the bottom right corner when you're on the front end. So for a screen reader user, if they're going through the front, it's only visible if you're logged in. It's not, you know, public on the website.
And the post type is enabled.
And the post type is enabled. They would get to that, and it's a button that they can trigger. And then what that does is it opens a modal, basically. It would count as a modal, right?
Yeah.
Or like a dialogue.
Yeah, I think so.
For accessibility checker that says how many errors and warnings there are.
Yep.
And then it has next and previous buttons to allow you to go through them. And then as you're going through them, it opens up a secondary modal for each individual issue.
That's correct.
That has information about it. So this is what you were talking about, like controlling the focus and stuff.
Yes,
Matt?
And you know, as a sighted user, we kind of worked to figure out what we thought would make the most sense with locking those focuses. So I worked with Steve. We put a set of rules in, you took a look at it and said, well, maybe it makes more sense to do it this way. So we, you know, kind of set it up in around that flow. But then we had a blind user take a look at it, and he said, well, you know, this works, but here's where it's confusing. So it's really cool to be able to look at our tool through the eyes of someone that doesn't look at it the same way that we look at it. So it was a really valuable experience for me to watch his process and to understand, regardless of how hard we tried to set up a flow that made the most sense to us, he was able to explain, well, you know, here's a way to improve it. So it was fascinating. I'm really excited to go through that and re-implement some pieces to match what he identified.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that just highlights, you know, for all of our listeners, how important user testing is. Because even when you have people that, I do accessibility testing almost every single day now as part of my job role, whether it's actually not always for a client, but I like write content, I do other things. Sometimes I have plugin developers who ask me for that, or I'm looking at something that is part of the core WordPress project. So I'm doing it all the time, but even I, like, the flow that I thought up, it worked, but it could be better.
Yeah.
And so that's where I think, like, we always need to try and include people with disabilities, like actual people who use the technology every day in our testing. It's so important.
Yeah, and I think this underlines, you know, being about what we're about, right? Like, it's that we're creating a plugin that tests websites for accessibility, right? But our plugin itself should be accessible, right? It's like, and I think in hindsight, like the way we have it set up, like Amber stated that we have like two modals, which I think, just the initial way I designed it, and I'm sure like after we got further into it and Matt came on board and he's probably like, ah, Steve, you should have made this one modal. But
let's just all give a shout out to Steve, the developer and CTO, who is able to design things.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because you designed something probably at a lot of other companies, there's someone else who's like a UX person or a UI person that's like, here is your Figma file. Yeah. You go build it. And we're running very small. We're a tiny team. And so we're frequently like, here's an idea. Can you build it? Yeah.
So, I mean, just a little bit of, you know, it just doesn't happen, right? Like, I'm a developer that actually has a college degree in graphic design, which is weird, right? Like, I did things backwards. But anyway, yeah. So, I just want to kind of echo what Matt was saying about seeing a user that's blind use the plugin and how that shifts a developer's paradigm about what they're doing, right? And Matt's new to the team, and I think accessibility has definitely been part of his world, but now it is his world.
it's a different world. It was an afterthought in most dev shops, and now it's on the forefront, as it should be.
Yeah, totally. And I had the same years ago. We did a client for a large government entity, and I think it may have been the first time we used user testers, right, Amber?
Yeah, when we did for the Workforce Solutions website.
And
that was the first time. Yeah.
And fortunately for me, we're a remote team, so we're all kind of scattered out throughout the United States and outside of the United States too. But fortunately for me, Amber and Chris videotaped the user testing, and it wasn't just a screen recording, right? Like, actually.
Yeah. So back then we had an office here that we had a couple employees in, because we weren't all as distributed then as we were. And so they came into our office. Now when we do user testing, we just do it over Zoom. But yeah, they came into our office and we set up like cameras so you could see like over their shoulder what they were doing. So you could also see their hands, which was kind of cool because you could see some of the keyboard interactions that they were using.
Yeah, totally. And just to see it, like, it definitely changes your whole paradigm, your whole thinking around development, and it definitely shifts the importance of it a lot. So I just wanted to echo what Matt said. So I would advise any development team that they can to start integrating some kind of those actual real life user testers into their dev process.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of the challenges that we encountered with, I know you sort of started to get into it, Steve, with talking about like items that are in a navigation menu. And what we haven't said yet is that we actually were able to build this with some funding from NASA, because we are the accessibility team on the new NASA website, which recently they launched in public beta mode. You can go check it out at beta.nasa.gov, little pitch for NASA, I guess. And they're using Accessibility Checker, and they gave us some feedback, and they're like, we really want it to be easier. And so we built it for them, but I'll say, like, as far as stretching the limits of the plugin, the NASA website is the one that's gonna do it, because, so you were talking about things buried in navs. They have a mega menu that has like, I don't even know, 10 submenus and maybe even more within that. Yeah. And so it's like, how do you surface that there's an issue if you click the menu and then click two other things and then it will be visible?
Yeah.
Right? So that was a challenge for sure.
Yeah. And it's,
and still is.
It still is. Yeah. I mean, I think the quick solution to that is disable the styles, right? You disable the styles, you're going to find that. Hopefully, right? You're going to find those issues that are in that nav menu. But I get that a non-technical person is going to have a little bit of trouble reading a web page with no CSS on it, right? But the element will be there. It will be highlighted, and you'll at least have some more context.
Of what's around it.
Yeah, of what's around it or where it may be. But that's definitely, it may be a little bit of an edge case, like mega menu, even a mega menu in and of itself for accessibility is a challenge, right? So getting that accessible is one thing, but then, you know, from our end, kind of aiding you in getting there, right? It's so right now the plugin will highlight those things, but if they're hidden, you can't see them until like you fly that menu out or you disable the styles. There are things that we can do in the future, I think, to make that a little more intelligent. I mean, I think there's a lot of things in regards to navigation menus that we've been thinking about, and Matt's had some ideas about kind of formulating some more intelligent scanning of components. Like that, like we're not just scanning an area hidden inside of a navigation menu, right? We're actually evaluating the whole navigation menu for accessibility.
How would we do that, Matt?
That's a great question.
What are your ideas?
Yeah, don't give away all of our secrets,
that's,
Matt.
That's all secret sauce. I think it's taking the intelligence that we have on the team and translating into code. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's not just going in looking for is this particular element missing from this particular piece. It's taking one step back and looking at it holistically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know one thing that I've been thinking about. I haven't logged the GitHub issue yet for it because I frequently have things floating around in my head and it takes me a while to get them out there where I can see them. But I'll tell you right now during the podcast. It's like you mentioned the ARIA hidden. Right now, when we flag that warning on ARIA hidden for people that aren't familiar, that is like saying this is hidden from screen readers, and we flag a warning to be like, should it be or not? We don't know. It's a warning. It requires a human to decide. But so let's say it's a social media icon. The only way you could really decide is if you would look and see if the link around it has an ARIA label that describes that, hey, this goes to Facebook. Or if there's hidden screen reader text also in the link, mm-hmm. right? One of those two things. Then you'd say, oh, yeah, it's fine to hide this icon or this image.
Yeah.
Because there's something else that conveys the information. But we just show you the icon or the image.
Yeah.
We don't actually show you the bigger parent and everything that's in there. And so part of me was like, man, maybe we need to change the way we're collecting the code snippet. Or, of course, what would be really cool is if we could get smarter and evaluate the whole thing and then not even have to ask you to check it because the plugin was able to check it for you.
Yeah, I think there's the future of this is definitely bridging the gap between the automated scan and then the human scan, right? The human evaluation. Because, you know, automated scans can only scan things that can be automated, right? And then to be fully accessible, it requires a human to evaluate certain things and to make those judgments. Just like you said, you could look at that social icon and intelligently with your human brain decide if it's compliant or not, right? And if the plugin's flagging something, one of those individual issues, right? You could go in and ignore it. In our plugin, we have an ignore feature, so you just go to the accessibility checker, you open the issue, you put in a message, like you would say, like, you know, Amber Hines evaluated, although we will log the user, I think, right?
Yeah. So you could just say test it and, has screen reader text or something.
And then you can ignore it. But I think the future is definitely being more intelligent in that regard, where we're algorithmically or we could call it like AI, right, of sorts, right?
Yes. Yeah, so let's say that. Yeah. Can we use open AI?
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
Can we integrate with that?
But, it's more like
a... Do a good job if you fed it sections of a website at checking for Wikipedia.
It's actually called EQD AI, Equalized Digital AI. Yeah.
We're going to write our own.
Yeah. You heard it here first.
I do not know how long that will take with two developers. Probably a long time. Everyone stay tuned. 5 years from now, we will have.
Well, I mean, I think it's scanning back a little bit. Instead of evaluating each little individual issue, you start to intelligently decide, what is this module on this website? Or what is this component on this website? this looks like tabs to me. Like, if this is tabs, then it should have A, B, C, and D, right? It should meet A, B, C, and D. It should have, like, you know, the role tabs on it, or and describe or controls, you know, all the area, the proper area labels on there. And we could decide that component as a whole, does it meet what tabs should be, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know another one that I've been thinking about is, like, if there's a div or a span that just has the word next or the word previous in it. Like, that to me seems like a really easy thing for us to look for. Like, if there is literally nothing else besides, like, next or previous or close inside a div or a span, I think it's pretty apparent that that's supposed to be a button. But it's not, right? So I do think maybe there's, like, just coming at, like, what's the logic and all of that? Mm-hmm. And, you know, where's that gap?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts, Matt?
No.
I'm throwing you to the walls here.
I'm a geek, guys. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, I know something that we have been working on, and you could talk a little bit about color contrast, some of the changes, because I think by the time this episode comes out, that will be live, and that'll be pretty exciting. Yeah,
goodness gracious, I hope so.
Because color contrast is another thing that's been a challenge for us, you know, outside of front-end highlighting, even having an accurate color contrast check.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think right now it really has problems with CSS variables. I don't think it evaluates them.
It does, but at a basic level, I mean, if you think about CSS inheritance and how variables can be inherited as well to algorithmically compute what a value is just based off of a style sheet or all the style sheets on the page coming from all different places, it is a Herculean task.
Yeah, because the background could be defined like 10 elements up.
Oh, yeah.
From where the text color is set, right?
Well, I mean, like, a CSS variable can be, you know, you start with your root, right? If you're writing CSS variable, inside the root, you define your CSS variables. But then it can be changed at any point going down the page. Like, it can be modified, it can be, you know, appended, all kinds of things. So
If anybody ever wants to take a look at what a beast of a developer Steve is, they should go look at the code that he's written for this. It's incredible. It was a Herculean lift. I do not envy what he put together there.
Our PHP, yes. It's a PHP powered, right? Yep.
Yes, but I mean, even with all that work, it's just not possible to simulate what right. the browser's seeing. It doesn't matter how mm-hmm. smart you are, how hard you work, it's just not possible. So we've decided that the way to solve this particular problem and probably some problems going forward is to render them through the browser and actually let the browser do the hard work of processing all that CSS and those variables and then running a rule set against it to determine if it's valid or not. And color contrast was the first run at this, and to this point, it's working beautifully. I'm really excited about the work that it's going to take off of us. A lot of our support requests are related to
color contrast.
Yeah. So it's I'm excited about where we're going with this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, and honestly, actually, if you think about it, color contrast is, if you look at like the web a million, that is one of the number one problems on the web. And I think that if we can build a tool that accurately communicates problems and doesn't flag, like, so I like Axe is a cool tool, but I've been on Axe on websites where I've used Axe and it's like, here's 175 things you should check for color contrast, because I think Axe can't tell either.
Yeah.
So I'm like, maybe we'll have a better bet on that. But I think, you know, if you can get something that makes it easier for people to see that, that could make a major difference for a lot of WordPress sites and thus a lot of sites on the internet.
Well, I mean, there's like when it comes to flagging accessibility issues, you've got to, let me see if I can explain this correctly. Like, where, like you describe Axe, right? Where Axe is telling you to go check, right? They want a human to check. Mm-hmm. And it's because they can't with 100% accuracy determine the color contrast of that issue, probably based on the complexity of that markup and the CSS that's attached to it, and maybe even some JavaScript, right? So I think what their approach is no false positives, right? So by prompting you as a human to evaluate it, they're...
Well, but I think that's a false positive.
To prompt you?
Like, if it is something that definitively doesn't have color contrast, and we're... it meets color contrast, let's say that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 4 point, you know, it's 5 to 1, or it's something high, right? So it isn't a problem, but we are telling someone you have to go check it. That to me is a false positive.
Yeah, but
because it's adding work for a user that theoretically could be done programmatically, maybe.
Well, I'm
or should be able to be done programmatically.
I agree. I totally agree from a human standpoint where you're coming from. Maybe I'm in defense of the algorithm. And
as the developer who's written one of them,
as the nerd, as one of the nerds here, there's two of us in this episode. But
hey, I'm nerdy too.
Yeah, Amber's pretty nerdy. She was writing macros earlier today, so we'll give her the nerd title. I think their methodology is to try not to have any false positives. And like you said, that element may meet color con, you look at it and you're like, oh yeah, it's like black text on white background, what's the problem, right? Like, but based on that markup, that may be a very difficult thing for the algorithm to decide, even though it is simple on your end. But it could be like, I mean, it could be nested 50 layers deep inside some markup. It could be absolute positioned, you know, like all kinds of things. Like, if you, I mean, think about it. You have like a div right here, like up top there's a div, and then below there's another div that has some text in it. And then you absolute position that text outside of that bottom div, and it doesn't have position absolute on that bottom div. So you put like top negative 50 or whatever, and it's actually overlaid on top of the box on top of it.
The div above it.
The div above it, right? So algorithmically, for code to figure that out, that this element's absolute positioned over top of a color, and the color contrast is wrong, or could be wrong, right? Or is right. It's like those things get very difficult. And I think you even raised issue yesterday on the NASA website, where there was a div with an image inside of it. And the image is absolute positioned inside of this div, and it's probably, it looks like it's positioned in a way that the image would be centered inside of that div. So there's an overflow all around, and that div has overflow hidden on it. So I think the objective of whoever made that component was to get this image in here, it probably expand it to a certain size and make sure that it's centered inside of this div.
And that it always has the same aspect ratio, I think.
Yeah, and it always has the same.
I think that's why they did that. And I flagged that on front-end highlighting because we did have our button that says, hey, I can't remember what specifically was wrong with that. Like, it didn't have alt text maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
So it had, right? And I was like, I can see the button that it doesn't have alt text, but it doesn't have the little pink dash box around.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know why, because normally in front-end highlighting, the images, if they get flagged, they have a pink box around it.
Yeah.
And then digging in, and it was like, oh, that pink box is there. It's just hidden below the other div.
It's inside the div, and the overflow is hidden. So we're adding a button, you know, a marker that you can click on to see what the issue is, right? And then we're putting an outline on that image, right? So we wrap the image in our own div, right? But it's inside of another div that has overflow hidden that is actually bigger than that div. Like, that's complex. Like, that's a complex thing for us to even fix ourselves. Now, we could traverse back up the Dom tree, check all the ancestry of that element, check to see if anybody within the ancestry tree of that element has an overflow hidden and has a width and a height that is greater than the parent. Like, and you have to do that all the way up the Dom tree. Like, that is some serious work. And Matt's over here.
Is that possible to do with PHP?
Matt, I'll let you speak on that.
Okay, I'm going to go with no. Just straight up no. No, it's...
So, like, it would have to be a JavaScript-based test with something like Puppeteer or some sort of way for the browser to render,
no.
Like, a virtual browser or something. Is that the way? Or it's not even possible with JavaScript?
No. I mean, I don't... We're doing it with JavaScript already.
Oh.
So, like... It yeah, we're already the front end highlighting gets added to the page, and all the, it's a little kind of app in and of itself. It's all JavaScript driven.
Yeah.
So
we may need to, and it's just getting off in the geek a little bit, but rather than wrapping that DOM element, we may need to do what we're doing with the buttons, an absolute position based off of the position, and draw the border around that.
Oh yeah, see that's there you go. That's why Matt is the man.
Just an old geek.
So,
guys.
Yeah, so part of what came out of testing it on, so this is the interesting thing when you're building a plugin, like any WordPress plugin, whether or not it's accessibility or not, is that it can be used on so many different environments, different hosts, different themes, different plugin collections. Like, there's only so much testing you can do before you're just like, we have to be willing to let this go out into the wild and just respond if we get support because something doesn't work, right? And so we did it, you know, correctly so, rightly so. There's a very tight process before plugins can get through the gate on NASA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of coding standards, and there's a lot of reviews, even when they're updating our plugin to a new version. So, like, we did a lot of testing on non-NASA sites, and then we got it on NASA. And I know that was one thing we were talking about, is we're going to move the location of our button because where it was overlaying didn't work as well for some of the themes we were testing it on, if there were tiny elements like social media icons really next to each other that all were flagged.
Yeah.
But also, I think, like, on the NASA website, there's some where if we position it differently, it'll be closer to the element.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, we were positioning it top left and, like, offset by, like, I don't know, 50 pixels or whatever. The button itself was around, like, 46 pixels, and so we were offsetting it a bit to the left of the element. And I think the big issue that arise from that, like you said, were, like, your social icons are in a list and they're all right close together. But even above that, like, any images that are, like, in a grid, right, and if they don't have a very large gutter on them, the icon would actually be laying over the image to the left, not over the actual image. So
it's harder to know what it applies to.
Yeah, so Matt worked on a pretty simple solution to move it into the top left corner of the element with, you know, just inset just a little bit. But I think you might be able to speak to it some, Matt. Like, you're doing some intelligent with some logic around the size, right?
Yeah. If we can go in and look at the size of the element that we're trying to place the button on top of. Should it go to the left? Should it go above? Should it go below? And right now it's like you said, fairly simple. If it's, you know, 80% of the width, then scoot it over. It's 80% of the height, bump it up. But what we really need is some real world application. Take a look at it.
Yeah.
This particular, well, that works in most instances, but right here, this is weird. So, you know, that's the joy of releasing these releases, and you just you just pray,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll get back some feedback. We'll be able to make some adjustments and make it smarter and smarter.
Cool.
Yeah. So I think this is our call to action for all of our listeners. go try. You can even try it in the free. Like, this feature exists in the free plugin because we thought it was really important. And actually, NASA was super enthusiastic about paying for something that would give back to the world of WordPress, because NASA is very much about advancing knowledge for humanity, and tools and all that kind of stuff. So it's in the free plugin. If you go try it, I think we would love to, like, hear about button positioning, or if there's things where it's saying it can't be found, but you're like, but I see it. It's right there on the page.
Yep.
And especially if you're using, like, different page builders, because we don't have licenses for all the various page builders, so we're not able to test the plugin with all of them. So, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think this Big Berry is kicking in here. I'm feeling fuzzy, guys.
There's a little bit of time left in Friday.
Yeah.
We'll see how productive it is. You'll be a very happy developer after this. You do not have to check your work again Monday. Make sure you didn't forget any semicolons.
That's right.
So, yeah, no, I think it's kind of fun. I want to try and do more of these episodes where we occasionally talk about the thought that's going into the plugin and some of the challenges that we're experiencing and what we're continuing to work on, because I think, you know, it's a little bit of that build in public kind of thing. But also, I think it's, I hope that we can inspire people to be thoughtful about usability beyond their typical audience or who they typically think about with their own plugins. If we have other plugin developers who listen to this, you know, because as we said earlier, right, like, we even learn.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. So I think that's it. So we enjoyed having you all here for our plugin dev notes episode. I don't know what the title of the episode is.
I don't know. Probably front end highlighting dev notes or something. I don't know.
So give it a try. Kick the tires. Reach out to us if you have any issues. And in the words of NASA, I'd like to leave you all with this. Godspeed.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.